And I hope for the fast pacing quantum mechanics, I'm not losing you. So in the last lecture, we talked about the wave functions, wave particle duality, and Schrodinger equations. Let's just remind ourselves the basic relations in quantum mechanics. One is the relation between energy and the frequency E equals h nu, and the other is the wavelength is also related to h, and momentum wavelength is equals h divided by the momentum. So those are the Planck-Einstein relations. And of course, what Planck-Einstein did was mainly on the electromagnetic wave, really showing that electromagnetic waves are granular, has particle characteristics. And there was de Broglie proposed that, well, the reverse should also be true. The Newtonian mechanics dealing with the mechanical motion, anything that has momentum also is a wave. So the Schrodinger equation address the wave function of this wave, and the Schrodinger equation written in the h bar squared 2m, and the Laplace operator of the wave function, and the potential energy times the wave function equals I h bar d cosine dt. I use a subscript t to denote that this is a time-dependent wave function. And here is the potential energy. Potential energy that the particle feels. It's the constraints of the surrounding on the material. And we used the separation of variables to separate the wave function psi, which is a function of time and space, into product of a stationary wave function and a time-dependent term. Right, and this we explain this wave function. Schrodinger himself didn't come up with an explanation. It was Born that proposed that it's not the wave function itself doesn't really have much significance, physical significance, and it's the complex conjugate times the wave function itself gives you a real number that represents the probability of finding this particle at certain instant of time at a certain location. That's what the physical meaning of the wave function. So we emphasize that in quantum mechanical world, everything is an operator. Time, location, and energy, momentum are operators. And it's probability, so you can find out what's the most probable location, what's the most probable momentum, energy of the object or the matter. And then there's also standard deviation. What's the uncertainty in the position, in the momentum, and in the energy. And the standard deviation obeys the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. So that's what's peculiar in the quantum world. You cannot measure position and momentum accurately at the same time. You cannot measure energy and time accurately at the same time. Those are the uncertainty principles. And so we use the separation of variable. And we separated, we found that the time-dependent part of the wave function, if the potential doesn't depend on time itself, So this time-dependent part is easy. It's just a constant exponential mass I, E, H bar, and T, or we can write it. I said this is E is separation of variable constant. And but I also alluded that this separation, this E, the reason we use E is because this E, you can prove it, is actually this separation of variable constant is actually the energy of the system. So what we have, because it's the energy, is really I omega T, where we know that H equals H nu equals H bar omega, right? So this is the time-dependent part. And for the time-independent part, we have H squared 2m cosine the Laplace operator plus U minus E cosine equals T. And this is the time-independent part. And we want this E, again, is a separation of variable constant, but it's also the system energy. And we want to find out. That's what we want in many cases. We want to find out the energy of this specific system we're dealing with. Right? And when we talk about energy transport, that's the first step. We want to find out, remember in chapter 1, see how much energy a particle has. And this quantum mechanics will tell us the allowable energy, the possible energy that this particle can have. So that's where we stopped in the last lecture. We did not solve any equation. But in this lecture, what we're going to do is show a few examples of solving the stationary Schrodinger equation. And from there, we can see that this energy is indeed quantized in many cases, as we alluded before. So let's take a simplest, start with the simplest case first. And for more complicated cases, I will jump. Okay, I will tell you how I get the what the solution looks like, but we're not going to go to the details. So if let's see my topic number here, and what distinguish? If you look at, we want to solve this equation. That's you can think about in engineering problems. Most of the time, we have equation. What distinguish different problems are the boundary conditions. And if you deal with the heat conduction, taking heat conduction, boundary conditions, and since here there's the internal, the energy constraints on the system, so you can think a heat conduction analogy is we have an internal heat source. So given an internal heat source, different internal heat source, different boundary condition, you got different solutions, right? So that's essentially what we're pursuing in the this lecture. We want to see what are the solutions look like for different potential, different U, and what will be the energy of the system, E. And this is a quantity we want to find, but it's inside the also inside. We also do not know the wave function, right? It's a typical so-called eigenvalue problem. You do you encounter probably this when you deal with separation of variable problems. Very often you want to find the eigenvalue of the problem, right? So so example solutions we want to look at in this lecture. And let me point to what are the problems we are going to look at. As I said, what distinguish different problems, the energy U are different, and also the boundary conditions might be different. So we are going to look at one case is just a free particle. And in that case, what we have is in the whole space, let's say one dimensional. We look at the mostly 1D, I'll give a 2D example. One dimensional, the whole space, there's no constraints on the potential energy. So it's a free particle there. And then we're going to deal with if the particle is not free, but it's constrained inside one-dimensional potential. Okay, this will be the potential profile. I gave a different potential profile. This is a potential, so from 0 to D, where the potential equals 0, but outside this region, I see the potential is infinite. That's a special case of potential distribution, right? And this is a simple so-called quantum well case, a particle in a box. When you have a very thin film, for example, the electrons inside this film can be approximated by the potential. It's because move the electron from inside the film to the vacuum level outside takes a big energy. And that energy, so the vacuum level, if we approximate a very big infinite, that would approximate that case. And those are the two cases. And then I will also give you the potential distribution. This is the x-coordinate, and this type of potential distribution, parabolic type of potential distribution. And you will find out this actually represents very well the atomic vibration, two atoms relative vibration or three atoms vibrating each other. So this is a parabolic potential distribution. And then we will look at the distribution. So this one is more like I have oxygen molecule, for example, two atoms vibrating. And then I will look at also this type of potential distribution, U. And this is the radial distance r, and goes to as the distance goes to zero, this potential goes to infinite and negative. And this will represent, for example, you have a nuclear core, nucleus inside, and the electron in the surrounding, and that will show that it's represented by this type of potential. So what we're going to do is to answer those questions. Under this given potential, what would be the energy of this particle? This particle could be a molecule, or atom, or this particle could be electron. Different cases that may have different potential. What are the energy? What would be the wave function looks like? Right? And that's the question we want to answer. So let's first look at the free particle in one dimensional. So what I have is this is an x, and free particle means no constraints on the particle in terms of the potential constraints. Okay? In the whole region, so it's one dimensional from minus infinite to plus infinite in the x direction. Right? So if I have that, I just write down the Schrodinger equation for this one-dimensional problem, h bar square 2m d psi dx square. So u equals 0, and this will be just e psi equals 0. Okay? This should be a simple problem. Right? This is a second order. Ordinary differential equation, which you're probably familiar with this form, right? The y is my psi. Gamma square is whatever I combine these two terms together. And it's my gamma square. It's the eigenvalue problem, right? So what's my solution look like? Psi equals. And if I combine this together and give it rather than gamma square, I just use a k square. So what I will have is I kx plus b e minus plus I kx. Well, this K square equals 2ME divided by H bar square. Right? That's the solution of this ordinary second order differential equation, because the eigenvalue here, the eigenvalue is y1 equals minus I gamma, y2 equals plus I gamma, right? So I have this solution for the electron wave function as a function of, this is a stationary part. I already have the time varying part. So if I want to look at what this really mean, given electron energy, I have this, I can calculate this K, so I plug in this psi into the time dependent. So here, if you look at my wave function here, I have time dependent part times the time independent part. So my total wave function as both a function of time and space, I multiply this I omega t back, I omega t back. And that C, I just see C is a constant combined with A, so A prime exponential minus I omega t plus kx plus B prime exponential minus I omega t minus kx. Right? That's just a combine to write down what would be the time-dependent wave function look like. And the reason I write this down is to really for you to see what this solution really means. What is this? Huh? It's a wave, right? It's a wave. Which direction is propagating? Omega t minus kx is a positive propagating, and this is a negative propagating. So what you have is really free particles propagating positive direction and negative direction, right? No constraints, and the energy could be there. There's no constraint in the energy either. Okay, this k, I do not have any constraints, so this energy could be any value. And that's what the physical meaning of this solution. It's free particle, it could propagate positive direction or negative direction. And in your homework, what I am asking, for example, I want to find out if you have a potential, electric potential step there. I want to find out reflection of this potential. So what you have is you have particle comes in, you may have reflection, you have transmission. And what you need to do is write down, okay, if this is going this way, that looks that part of the solution, right? And if it's going back, it looks like this part of the solution. And then forward, this region U is not zero, you have to find out what is the proper K for that. And then you may use your boundary conditions to find out the relationship between those coefficients and find out the flux. So that's the general line of the homework. But this is, let's say, the free particle case. And now I'm going to look at the case where the particle is not free. The particle is subjected to the potential constraints on the two sides. It cannot go to minus infinite, cannot go to plus infinite. 0 to d, that's the region the potential is 0. But beyond that, the potential is infinite. So let's say this, we can call it a quantum well. Doesn't have to be called a quantum well, it's a particle in a box. And in this case, again, it's 1D, right? So we, again, consider only first 1D. And my constraint is U between 0 to D is 0, and the outside is infinite. So I still come back and look at the steady state solution first. Okay? So steady state, most of the time we only need to look at steady state. The reason I write this down is just to really tell you what does it mean physically. So steady state, and between 0 to D, what will be my solution look like? Between 0 to D, remember U equals 0, right? Potential is 0. That's my what's given in the problem. What will be the solution look like? That's like a free particle, right? This is the case when U equals 0. That's my equation. I have the same equation, I have the same solution, except let's say now I have to think what are the coefficients A and B. So I have the same solution, mathematical solution, my psi in this region is A E minus I K X plus B E plus I K X, where this K given what I 2 M E H bar square. Right? That's repeating what I did for free particle. This is the same equation, same solution format. The problem is free particle is that solution extended through the whole region, but in the case I'm considering here, I also know when x less than 0 or larger than d, I have the potential goes to infinite. If the potential goes to infinite, I look at the Schrodinger equation, right? This goes to infinite. What's my wave function? What kind of wave function can satisfy that equation? Zero, right? Otherwise, it cannot satisfy this equation. So they only say that what it means is I cannot push a particle to infinite potential. There's no particle that can have infinite potential there. So it's just to say, in this region, wave function is zero, right? So my solution is divided into two regions now, unlike a free particle. Okay? And then my next step is trying to match the boundary condition. Because I have two boundaries. So boundary condition for this quantum mechanical problem, let me not go into prove it, but just to give you, in general, the boundary condition is the wave function must be continuous. This is probably easy to accept because we know it's similar to when we do heat transfer, temperature is continuous, right? So one of these boundary condition is psi is continuous. And the second boundary condition is the first order derivative. The psi, the fourth order derivative at the boundary. All this is at the boundary, right? Is also continuous. Okay? And this is more a requirement of particle continuity. Okay, we in the last lecture we gave how to calculate particle flux that has this first order term. So if this one is continuous, you can show that the first order gradient also is continuous. Particle is the flux is continuous across the interface. So those are the requirements. But for this specific example, the problem we're dealing with here, actually using this one is enough. Okay, psi is continuous because I know I have two undetermined coefficients A and B. I have two boundaries, x equals 0, x equals d. I apply two boundary conditions. The problem is more or less fixed, right? So now I apply these two boundary conditions. X equals 0, what I have? x equals 0, for psi equals 0, right? On this side, so what I have is I have the solution in this region. I also allow this region for psi equals 0, this region for psi equals 0, the wave function. So x equal to 0, you plug in for psi equals 0, what I have in terms of the coefficients of A and B. Okay, A plus B. I just want to check whether you're sleeping or not. A plus B equal to 0. That's the first boundary condition. Right? Now tell me what's the second boundary condition. At x equals D, the wave function is also 0. So let me know. What is it? EIKD plus BEIKD equal to 0. So it gives me two equations to solve for A and B. Right? That's the general strategy in solving ordinary differential equation. But this problem, you can say, it's a set of homogeneous boundary conditions. You cannot solve for A and B. Right? That's a typical eigenvalue problem. You don't solve for A and B. You can find the relation between A and B, but you cannot find the absolute value of A or B. Can you find it? Unless this is a 1, or this is a non-zero number, I can find the solution, right? For eigenvalue problem, what it really you can solve at the end is this k. That k has energy. You solve energy. We'll see. So go to solve it. Let's say a equals minus b. We plug in a equals minus b. So what I have, I pull this a out. E minus ikd minus exponential ikd equals 0, right? Just an elimination. So what it tells me is, what is the minus ikd minus exponential ikd? What is this? Cos eix is cosine x plus ix, right? Complex operation. Cosine x plus I sine x. You forget, pick up your complex numbers. So what I have here, cosine cancel, so I have sine term. So what I have, minus 2iA sine kx equal to 0. Right? My A cannot be 0. If A is 0, B is 0, I don't have, I put sine everywhere is 0. There's no particle there. So the only way to have the 0 is somehow this sine term is 0. I should not be x, it should be d, right? Here is d, kd. Okay, so kd, I want sine kd equal 0, what's condition? Kd equals n pi, right? So I have k, so since n enters some integer, so I put a kn. Just represent, I can have many n's. This n could be 0 plus minus 1, right? I will eliminate some possibilities later on, but those are the mathematical possibilities, right? So now given this, what it means is here I have 2me. That means ne can be a function of n. H bar square equals n pi d, right? So now I start to get the energy is quantized for this particle in a potential well problem. It's no longer free particle as the first example, right? So the En equals pi n pi d square h square 2m. So that's my solution. And if you check, in the last lecture, I gave a very simple argument. Just to say, well, this has to have standing wave here, right? Based on this standing wave requirement, I derived that the energy is a discrete number. And here, that is not based on any equation, but here I'm based on Schrodinger equation, and you can compare this result with what I gave in the last lecture. It's identical. Okay? And it's not only identical in math, but also in physics. You can go to plot the wave function now. So I have found the energy eigenvalue. Energy, or it's an eigenvalue of this solution of the differential equation. I can write down the wave function, because what I have in general inside wave function, right? A, B. So A equals minus B. So what I have is minus 2iA sine and KNX. Right? That's to say 2iA sine KN is n pi x divided by d. Okay? Right? So my that's my wave function. This is a sine. You can see, I say it's a half wave, full wave. That's my solution also. Tells me. This is forming a standing wave. And but I have one problem. You say, okay, you find your energy eigenvalue. I'm convinced it's quantized. But you don't know the A, right? You have not solved the full problem yet. So what do? You use a normalization. Because what we say is this is a probability. Probability of finding particle in the whole domain is 1. It must be somewhere, right? So what they say, this is the probability of finding the particle at location x. And if I integrate from minus infinite to plus infinite x, it must be somewhere. From minus infinite to plus infinite. And of course, because it's 0 outside this region, so I just have the wave function in this region dx equals 1, and from that I can find the A. Right? So after you find A, the whole problem is solved. You find the wave function, you find out your energy eigenvalue, and also remember, let me come back to put an N here, because you can see this wave function depends on number of N. It's a different solution. Right? Now I want to eliminate some of these n's. First, n equals 0. N equals 0 means wave function is 0. There's no particle anywhere. So I don't need that n equals 0. And n equals plus and minus. And turns out that this plus and minus is just, okay, sine wave function change, but the particle distribution doesn't change. So it's really repeating. So what I really have, this n, is n equals 1, 2, that's the meaningful solution. Okay, so this is a one-dimensional problem, right? Before I go to those problems, those different potential, I want to do a two-dimensional problem, because there are some important concepts. Based on multi-dimensional problem, it's not reflected in one-dimensional problems. So let me do a two-dimensional problem. And this two-dimensional problem, again, I deal with this case, potential. Now this is a one-dimensional potential. I deal with a two-dimensional potential example, right? So 2D potential well. And so this one is, this is my potential, this is the x direction, this is the y direction, this is 0d, and d, I just do a square potential. So inside, I say the potential is 0, and outside, again, I say the potential is infinite. You see, you are doing exercise. Yes, actually, it has been really an exercise of quantum mechanics. Any textbook will give this as a simplest, this one-dimensional problem is the simplest solution. But technology-wise, it has got there. Okay. Before, it was just an exercise. And since the 70s, people have developed really very light thin film groups. You can realize those kind of situation in reality. So this is actually very meaningful in terms of nanotechnology. Use the simple solution often. Okay, so this one you can think about if you have a wire rather than a film, and making it very small. Why has to be small? This I'm not going to give you a number, but the last lecture I gave you a number. Remember, after I got this solution for energy, I said plug in the typical number m there. You find out that unless your m is of the order of electron mass, and that d is of the order of 100 angstrom, you really do not have very large energy separation, right? So that's why you need to get to nano to look at those quantum effects. And now let's look at this problem. And I want to build a solution based on the one-dimensional problem. So this is the one dimension. Now I just have two dimensions. So I write down the Schrodinger equation again. It's h bar squared 2m d psi dx squared. Two dimensions, so the Laplace operator. And then, again, inside u is 0, right? Inside the potential, inside this region, u is 0. So I have E psi equals 0. This is inside the box, inside the well. And outside is psi equal to 0, outside. That's same argument because I'm assuming the potential outside this region is infinite. Right? So what I do next, this is a two-dimensional problem, partial differential equation. What's the most popular technique of partial differential equation? Separation of variables, right? So I do separation of variables. I say psi is a function of x, y, and I separate them into x function and a y function. Okay? And you plug in the equation, what do you have? Let me skip, okay? You do the equation, you simplify your dx squared. That's a typical way we do separation variable, dy squared. And then this one is my 2me h bar squared equals 1. Or equals 0, right? So that's my, after I do separation of variable, I get this equation. So just as we do the argument of separation of variable, this one depends on x only, this one depends on y only, this one doesn't depend on x nor y, right? It's energy eigenvalue. So what's my choice? My choice is each of these terms must be constant. Well, is a positive constant or negative constant, right? My energy is positive. And so this must be, one of them at least must be negative. But turns out both of them have to be negative. If it's one is positive, you can plug in the solution. At the end, you find that it's not rational. So what I have is both of them must be negative. So this is a delta d dx squared. I write that as a kx squared. And the same as a dy, dy squared. I write a ky squared. Both of them, because both of negative, I just put a negative sign, put a positive number there. Again, this is the same problem as my eigenvalue problems, right? I said here, this is the same as here. And I follow the same solution method that I use for 1D problems. Okay, it's essentially now I have two 1D problems. So let me give you the solution. And in terms of solution, what I found at the end is kx, ky. It's again not an exact solution for x and y, but a solution for the eigenvalue. So what I found is kx times d must equals n pi. And again, this n equals 1, 2 as a one dimensional. And I found also ky times d equals another constant integer is l equals 1, 2. L pi. Okay, so what does this tell me? Because I plug in here, this is a kx square ky square minus. That gives me the energy is E equals h bar square 2m kx square plus ky square is n pi d square plus L pi D square. This is my energy solution, eigenvalue. So this, now I got two integer, so this energy function well, depends on NL. This depends on these two integers. Okay? And then I can also find out the functional form of x and y, it's a two sine function, just like a one-dimensional problem. The one-dimensional problem I have in one dimension is one sine x. Now I have two dimensions. In the other direction, I also have sine y. So my wave function cosine L, NL is a constant that, again, you can determine by the normalization method, by this normalization method, which I'm skipping that part, and sine, what I have is n pi x divided by d sine n pi y, oh no, l pi y divided by d. So this is my wave function, and this is the energy eigenvalue. Right? Yes?
You said that n equals 0 is a trivial solution.
Right.
Is it necessarily a trivial solution
that you're touching? It's a good question. I think it's still...
If L is 1...
But L equals 1, n equals 0, I can say this wave function is still 0, right? So I think it's still not allowed. And so I have this solution for the energy eigenvalue and also the wave function. And this is where I need to add some comments. And look at it. For one-dimensional problem, I get a one integer n. For two-dimensional problem, I got two integer. One is n, the other is l. And those integers are called the quantum numbers. Okay, quantum numbers. And typically, for three-dimensional, I will get three quantum numbers. Okay, so two-dimensional, I have two, and one, I have one. And the second comment is, now you look at if n equals 1, l equals 2, which means e, 1, 2, right? This is and cosine 1, 2. And then this is one case. I want to look at the other case is n equals 2, l equals 1. So I get a 2, 1, and psi 2, 1. What's the difference between these two cases? Or similarities? Huh? It has the same energy, How about wave function? It's a flip, right? But this flip means it's not identical. The energy is identical, the wave function is not, right? So a wave function, one wave function is one quantum state. So that means these two quantum mechanical states have the same energy. Okay? And this is a very important concept for our future counting. Because at the first chapter I said we're going to count how many energy, how many particles, how much energy. And this one is two quantum states have the same energy level. And those kind of situation is called a degenerate. The energy is degenerate. Or degeneracy, the number, what's the degeneracy? Okay? And so the energy level is degenerate. That means at this energy level, there could be several quantum mechanical states. Okay? So this is we deal with a one-dimensional problem, at least in this example, you don't see the degeneracy yet. Right? Two dimension, I got start to see. Three dimension, I will see more. Because of this, I can have more of this combination, three integer combination that can potentially satisfy the same energy level. So that's why I bring up to this concept of degeneracy. Now, since I'm in degeneracy, I want to add another concept, which you cannot obtain from the Schrodinger equation. This is a relativistic result of quantum mechanics. And this is the electron spin. Okay. And it turns out that the particles this is a requirement of angular momentum. I don't think I myself is the expert on explaining the spin. And it's basically, it's a requirement of spatial symmetry of the angular momentum. And it's a result you cannot get from classical Schrodinger, not classical, quantum Schrodinger equation. You can only get from relativistic treatment of the quantum mechanics. So what it tells is that the for electrons, it also has additional quantum number that you cannot obtain from solving the Schrodinger equation. And similarly for other particles. Okay, but the most important is the electron that spin quantum number is a fractional. And electron spin has two spin quantum number. One is a plus 1/2, the other is a minus 1/2. So what this tells me is if I'm dealing with, through all this example, if I'm dealing with the electron inside the box inside the film, one-dimensional or two-dimensional, and I have obtained the solution from the Schrodinger equation of the wave function, but I'm missing one quantum number. And that quantum number is S. So really, for electrons, this is not the case for a long-charged particle. I don't need to consider those spin for long-charged particle. So for charged particle, like an electron, I have N and S. Okay? And that S has two value. So if before I have N equals 1, then for each N equals 1, I have two S number. So even though this one-dimensional problem, here, I do not have degeneracy in one-dimensional problem from Schrodinger equation itself, but the relativistic quantum mechanics tells me I do have a degeneracy because at that energy level, this spin does not give you additional energy level unless you adding magnetic fields. This is related to also a response to magnetic fields. So this tells me here is really to decide this quantum states of electron. I need not only this quantum number obtained from the Schrodinger equation, but I need to add the spin quantum number. Okay, so I add a factor of 2. And remember, this is important because there is a fundamental Pauli exclusion principle. And Pauli exclusion principle tells us and what Pauli exclusion principle tells us is one quantum state can have a maximum of one electron. It can be empty. Quantum state tells you what's possible, and it doesn't have to be. So a quantum state can have maximum one electron, or it can have zero electron. It's not, that state is not occupied. But it cannot have 2. It cannot have 3. That's the maximum it can have. And this is for charged particle. For other like a photon, you do not have this same principle. Okay, a photon quantum state can have as many as you can. But for charged particle, like electron, you can have only maximum one particle in one quantum state. And this is important for the counting. So that's just a very quick comment on the Pauli exclusion principle. And what we're going to move on is continue what I promised here. Doing this and doing this, different potential levels. And for free particle box, and this is a 2, 3, 3, and 2, 3, 4. Now let's do a harmonic oscillator. Let's do the other potentials all together. So I want to deal with this case where the potential is a parabola, okay? And what does this potential really mean? I have a simple picture for this. If I have a spring mass problem, okay? This is spring mass. What's the force of a spring mass? Kx, mass Kx, right? And this one equals the potential derivative, force equals negative potential derivative, gradient. That's how you derive force, is du dx, force potential gradient. So you integrate it, you see this potential is really 1/2. Let me use a capital X because I was using K there, capital K. So Kx squared, right? So that's my plus Kx squared. So this is my harmonic potential. Okay, because this is a spin, ideal spin, harmonic, second order. Okay, so for this potential. If you write down your Schrodinger equation again, you will say it's a little bit more complicated, one-dimensional, right? H squared 2m d psi dx squared. But now I have to add in this potential minus energy times potential equals 0. That's the equation you want to solve. Okay. And really going through this, solving this equation need one lecture. So you can see I'm going to skip it. Okay? But I'm going to tell you the energy eigenvalue, what's allowed energy eigenvalue. And the energy allowed for this one again, it's a one-dimensional problem. So I have one quantum number, and this is h nu n plus 1/2. Well, this nu is, if you do classical mechanics, you get this nu is a km square root. This is the same nu as classical mechanics. But what it tells you, the quantum that different from classical, is that in the quantum world, this energy of this oscillator cannot be continuous. Okay, but must be multiple number of this h nu, except that you have a 1/2 factor. And this 1/2 h nu is called a zero point energy. And this zero point energy means even though you just put it there, there's no vibration of this harmonic oscillator, that's minimal energy must have, 1/2 h nu. Why? It's also a requirement of Heisenberg uncertainty principle, energy and time. So you got this minimum zero point energy. Okay? So, and then, of course, you can go to solve for the, given this, you also solve the wave function. And this model, this harmonic oscillator model, represents very well the vibration of, for example, hydrogen atoms, the oxygen atoms relative to each other. And if you have two atoms vibrating relative to each other, the mass is the center of the mass center is M1, M2, M1 plus M2. So this is M1, this is M2. That you use the effective mass for the harmonic for these two atoms. That will be the frequency you get. Okay. Let me move on to the next one, and then I will show a desperate way to derive this energy, because I don't want to solve the equation. Okay, so my next potential is this potential. I want to find out what's the electron energy when it's circulating a nuclei, right? The previous example is what are the atomic vibrational energy, this harmonic oscillator, what's the atomic vibrational energy allowable? And this example, this potential is what are the electron energy possible in a nuclei. See, this will be, for one electron example, it will be representing best hydrogen, the electron in hydrogen, right? So let me erase this. So I have a positive charge, E, and a negative charge, E, orbiting. And because of the nuclei, it's very heavy compared to electron. So I see the nuclei does not move, and the electron orbits around the nucleus. So what I have then, what are the electrostatic potential force between a positive charge and negative charge? Do you remember if I have positive or negative charge? Reverse square, right? And the charge, the product of the two charge. So the force is E square, this product of these two charge, R square, and then I do the international unit, that's a 4 pi epsilon 0. Epsilon 0 is the permittivity of the, this is two words I often confuse. I think it's the permittivity of the free space. Okay? So epsilon 0 is a constant. And from the force, again, I want to find out the potential. So I have then du dr, right? The force potential relation. So I integrate it. I get the u as a function of r equals, if I integrate it, I get a 4 pi epsilon 0 and e squared over r. That's why I draw this shape. Okay? Now, what is this problem? Is it one-dimensional, two-dimensional, three-dimensional? Huh? Minus sign? No, it actually has a, because minus cancel, then r squared, so minus, that minus is actually there. Is this a three-dimensional problem or one-dimensional? Three-dimension, I have three quantum number. Okay? So what I will do, what I will find out is if I go to solve the Schrodinger equation, I find out I have three quantum number, NLM, and this is a function of r theta phi, because if I use spherical coordinate, the electron that's the best coordinate, I get a position and two angles, theta phi angle, for spherical coordinate. Okay, but let me okay. I will write this again. You use separation of variable, and then this is a function of n. This is a function of lm and theta phi. This is a typical separation of variable solution, but I will skip the rest because see, I think in my book I gave some example the solutions. So what's important is for you to recognize now I have three quantum number and I have not counted that spin yet because I'm dealing with strong electron. I need to later on count the spin. Right, this is just a solution of the Schrodinger equation. And then this is the wave function. And then the energy turns out does not depend on L and M. It depends only on inverse n square and I think it is m. I have to put my notes now. I forgot. Okay, so m c1 square and 2 h bar square n square m c1 square. Well, c1 equals e square 4 pi epsilon 0. Okay, that's just, this is a C1 divided by R. And, but although the energy, you can say, only depends on N, but there is some constraint. Not good. I use the, this same M. Let me use the big M. That M is the mass. This is a the quantum number, this is the mass. This is the integer, this is the mass of an electron. And now I have the constraints on n, and it turns out my constraints on this three number is n must be less or equal to l plus 1, and then m must be less than l. Yes? This capital mass? This is just the mass of the electron cell. Okay, the nuclei is stationary, does not really move. So at the end, it's just like you, it's the electron mass that's, yeah. So these are the limit on the quantum numbers. Okay, I gave you this, I just forced onto you. And let's look at what it means. Okay, so if I have n equals zero, n equals one, I cannot have n equals zero. N equals one. What are the L and M? What's possible L? What's possible M? L equals 0, what's M? So in that case, I have L equals 0, M equal to 0, and I will get a wave function 1, 0, 0. Right? Yes?
I think it should be n is greater than L plus 1 instead of smaller than L plus 1.
You're right. N is greater. You're right. Thank you. Yeah. So that's the maximum of L. Otherwise, you got a lot of L. Right? And now I get N equals 2. And then L equal to 0, L equal to 1. Those are the two possibilities. Right? And then, what are the M? M equal to 0 here. M equal to 3 values now, because the M absolute value less than L. So I have minus 1, 0, plus 1. So here I have cosine 2, 0, 0. Here I have cosine 2, 1, minus 1, and cosine 2, 1, 0. Cosine 2, 1, 1. I have, for n equals 2, I have 4 wave functions. So this level degeneracy equals 4. For n equals 1, I only have 1 wave function. So if I don't consider spin, this level is not degenerate. And of course, I'm dealing with electrons, so add s. I add the s because each of this quantum level, each of this quantum state also have the electron can spin up, spin down. One half positive is up, spin down. So that's what typical people use. So what this tells you is that the electron energy level in the n equals 1, so I have E1, and this is if you plug in this number for electron, you will find out this is minus 13.6 electron volts divided by n squared. This is just after you substitute in. So this is E1 is minus 13.6 electron volts relative to 0. 0 is the vacuum level. Deep, when they bond, the electron bond to the nuclei, that's how deep they are. Okay, the energy. And that's a very strong, large energy, okay, compared to KT is 26 milli electron volts. 13 electron volts is about 1,000 times larger. Right? Oh, 50 times. 500. Okay. Well, you can figure out. E2, how much is it? You're laughing. E2. Okay, so this is about a quarter of 13.6. But E2 I have, so here I have two wave function, because after two spin, two quantum states, right? Two quantum states. For n equals 1, I have two quantum states. And n equals 2, this wave function, the 100, 200, those are symmetric wave functions. So what it looks like is if you plot in the 3D, it's just a sphere. This is solution, if you plot the solution. And then for those, it's the dumbbell shape. So this is a X, Y, Z, dumbbell shape the wave function. So what means the electron is orbiting on those dumbbell, that's the orbit of the electrons. Okay? So what this is called 1s shell, this is a 2s, that's here. And then you have p shells. Okay? And the p has a 3-wave function. That means how many electrons can you have? 6. So n equals 2, 2s can have 2, 2p can have 6, so n equals 2 can have a maximum of 8. So this is a 8, so it's really 2n squared. That's the rule here, the degeneracy. Okay, n equals 2 is 8. Now you start to think about periodic table. okay? Why the eight? Why you can have two electrons? Helium is two electrons stable, right? Then what's the next stable one? Huh? Neon. Huh? Okay, neon has how many electrons? 10. So what it does, you put in 2 here, then you put in 8 here. It fill up. And then the next one is much higher energy. It's stable. The thermal energy is not enough to push the electron up. KT. Thermal energy is about 26 millielectron volts. Right? And this one, the between the energy level, is 13.63 electron volts. That's about 10 electron volts difference here. Right? Helium is very stable. That's why you need to cool to. No, not just that. Yeah, you need to cool very low temperature for helium. Right? So. So those are the energy levels of electron in atom and molecule, vibrational. And I did not give you the derivation of the energy level. I said that I have a desperate way to show you why it's this, okay, by not solving the equation, by coming back to my hand-waving argument as I used in last lecture. Remember in the last lecture, I say I have formed standing wave for potential well. And I showed that the energy level of the electron in this potential well is actually same as we got today after we solved for this exact say Schrodinger equation, right? But for this other potential, I'm not giving the exact argument, but I still can use the argument to show why for this potential, the energy is quantum number is n squared in the denominator, but for the harmonic oscillator potential, it's the n linear. Right? You can see it's really the potential profile that gives me this big difference. Right? So let me do a hand waving way. And I actually have not seen this argument before, so maybe. That's just because of my ignorance. And I want to show you through this basic, so here is my potential, and this is the potential energy, this is the x. And remember, the Schrodinger equation, I have 2 terms. This term is more like my kinetic energy. This is the potential energy term. At the end, the E is represent eigenvalue for the combined kinetic plus potential. Okay? And then what I'm doing roughly is I say, roughly, let me say the kinetic equals potential. In classical mechanics, this is true. In high temperature, always, say, roughly speaking, kinetic potential equal partition, so-called equal partition. But I'm just using that to the quantum, which I have not checked myself. I can go back and check whether how true is that. But so I'm going to say, well, for this wave function to stand, I say I form standing wave here. Okay? Standing wave means the wave function is zero, but I'm not exactly, for those potential is not infinite, so it's not exactly zero. Again, my argument is hand waving. I'm not doing the exact way. So I do this, and I similarly do all this. So here is lambda divided by 2, and this is my first one is x1, my second one is x2, right? This is the intersect of this wave with the potential. So where this x1, the xn would be, you can say this is half lambda, but then half of the x, so it would be 4n lambda. Right? I'm just saying if my form is standing wave, given wavelength, where the intersect of this wave with the potential, right? So this is x1, x2, or you have three half waves, that's x3. So this is where it intersects. That means my lambda equals 4xn times n divided 4xn. And that means I go to calculate my potential, the kinetic energy is 2m p squared is 2m h divided by lambda squared. That equals 2m h divided by lambda is 4xn divided by n squared. Yes? This is okay. This is a half wave, form a standing wave. This is the lambda, right? This is the full wave, one period. So this half wave, I see this side is one quarter, this side is one quarter. So that's why. Here?
No,
no. Oh, you're right. Thanks. Okay. Thank you. 4xn divided by n. So then here I need to also switch it. Hn 4xn. Right? So now I see my kinetic energy equals potential energy. As I said, I don't think it's rigorous or valid, but let's just put it there. See what I have. 4m hn 4xn squared. This is a kinetic energy equals potential energy at this location is what? 1 half k xn squared, right? Xn is 4n lambda squared. So this is a potential because xn is n lambda divided by 4. And this is a, oops, I don't need it. I just write the xn because I don't need to solve for xn squared. Right? Kinetic potential. So from here, I find out that what is the xn squared. Then I find out where should be, how much should be the total energy. So here, what I have is xn squared equals 2m cancel k. Km square root 1 half and 4hn. That's my, it's just solving this equation. Okay? And then my total energy is, since I say kinetic or potential, so my total energy, I just say kn squared. That's the total, right? It's twice of the potential energy. So I plug in there, what I have is 4hn k over m. Right? So my simple argument leads to something like this. Hn, h nu, my nu is 2 pi, I don't have that 2 pi. Right? But I get h times n based on this simple argument. Right? So this is one for the harmonica oscillator. And you can do the same thing. You could go try for the potential. So this is the potential of electrons. And then you say this is my first wave. This is my second wave. And you do the same thing, you'll find out that in this case, I got proportional to n squared in the denominator. So what I'm showing you is I didn't go to solve the equation, but I proved more or less that without solving the equation, just based on this simple standing wave idea that the solution I got is consistent with this simple argument. Right? So that's the 2K geometry already, and I have one last geometry which I cannot do with this way, and that's the angular momentum. This is the rotation. I have the vibration, I have electron circulating the atom, I have the vibrational energy of two atoms, but the atom like a hydrogen molecule, right, or oxygen molecule, they can vibrate to each other, but they can also rotate, and that rotation is so the rotation, rigid rotation, and this is a model for, I say this is oxygen atoms. Okay, the bonding is the relative vibrational part already dealt with in the harmonic oscillator. But then the other possibility is this atom will rotate. And for this rotation, you actually do not start from Schrodinger equation. You start from the momentum form, the angular momentum form of the Schrodinger equation. So at the end, I don't have a good way to make this argument. And the angular momentum is itself is very special in quantum mechanics, because we said this is angular momentum in classical way, right? R times the momentum. But in quantum mechanics, location and momentum cannot be measured accurately at the same time. So angular momentum itself is special. And that's probably why I cannot make an argument for you. What's the energy eigenvalue I'm giving you here is energy, but it's a rigid rotor, so it has 2 degrees of freedom, rotation, theta and phi. The r doesn't matter, right? It's rigid. The distance is rigid. So I have 2 quantum number, but the energy is, again, degenerate, is 2i h bar square l plus 1. And this m is less than l. That's similar to the electron in this case. Okay, so this is the sometimes this is written as H times B L plus 1. And that B, you can see how it's related to I is the moment of inertia. So is if I have 2 atoms M1, M2, and this is R, the distance. So I have M1, M2, M1 plus M2. R0 square. That's the moment of inertia. And this is the solution, just to take it for rigid rotor. And what I'll do in the next lecture, I'll spend some time to further elaborate on the solutions and look at the order of magnitude. So you can see this is the atomic distance. This is the interatomic force interaction. So a lot of atomic information you can get if you can measure the vibrational frequency. And that vibrational frequency can be measured by spectroscopy. So you can actually get a lot of information of the atoms based on the simple models. That's what we're going to discuss in the next lecture. Okay, so today is Monday. And my office hour, you're welcome back. And also, if you read my book there, and you find any mistakes, please let me know. I'm targeting sending back everything by middle of October. So if anything you tell me before that, I can correct it. After that, they will just put it into the final published form. It's a scary thought because I keep finding mistakes. Okay. Thank you.